Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. And I'll say right at the outset, I have three friends right now who are suffering from pancreatic cancer. And so it's been high on my list of things to talk about here on the show. And I'm so glad to have our two guests with us today to talk about this cancer. Dr. Emily Winslow, surgeon at UW Health. She specializes in diseases in the liver, the bile duct, and the pancreas. Also an associate professor of surgical oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Winslow, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And with us as well, Dr. Noelle Locati has been with us in the past. She's a medical oncologist at the UW Carbone Cancer Center. She's an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So thank you for joining us as well.
Pleasure to be here.
We will be talking about pancreatic cancer, some of the treatments, some of the new research that's going on. As I said, I have three friends with pancreatic cancer. What about you? Do you have a loved one or a friend who's been diagnosed? How has this cancer maybe affected your life? I hope you'll join in our conversation. Our number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Well, let's start with some basics here. We don't usually think about the pancreas, frankly. I never thought about mine until if it's not working, though, then that's a problem. So where is it in the body, and what does it do? Dr. Winslow?
Sure. So the pancreas is it's a gland in your body, and it's located fairly high in your abdomen and fairly close to your back, and it goes pretty much from the right side all the way to the left side. It sits in a pretty critical area in your body near where a lot of important drainage is into your intestine and a lot of blood flow, and its function is primarily kind of two function. One, it makes insulin and other hormones that help control blood sugar. And then second, it makes digestive juice, which helps you digest foods that you eat. And it mixes with the food. Pancreas juice will mix with food fairly soon after you eat it to help you absorb it.
So that's what it does. And what happens when cancer forms there?
Sort of interestingly, a cancer of the pancreas generally won't affect the function of the pancreas all that much, meaning it won't always cause diabetes, but it sometimes can, and it can make diabetes harder to treat, and it can affect digestive function as well. But often it doesn't have any of those symptoms when it shows up.
Dr. Locati, somebody asked me, mentioned who was going to be on today, and somebody said, well, what is a medical oncologist anyway?
I'm a chemotherapy doctor.
All right.
That's basically the simple way to think about it.
Okay, so there we go. Again, you can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Now, one person, and I have three friends who have pancreatic cancer. How common is this?
I have numbers. So it's the third most deadly cancer across the U.S., and right now, the incidence is about 49,000 new cases and 41,000 deaths. That was an estimate from 2015. In Wisconsin, more people die of pancreas cancer than die of breast cancer. It's one of the few cancers that isn't going down. Most cancers are becoming less common. Pancreas cancer is stable to increasing.
Do we know why it's such, how it develops or what happens that causes cancer in the pancreas?
We don't have a good sense. There's certain conditions like hereditary pancreatitis where those patients are very high risk, but most patients with pancreas cancer, we can't put our finger on a single cause. There are certain things like age, smoking history, sometimes a little alcohol use, obesity that can contribute, but we don't often have a single reason.
Is there a genetic component to it?
There can be. There can be families that have strong history of pancreas cancer. There's a gene called the BRCA2 gene that is associated with pancreas cancer. But again, most pancreas cancer patients have no family history.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking online to look and see who has had pancreatic cancer. And one person happened to be from Milwaukee, an actress, Charlotte Ray. You may or may not know her. Mm-hmm. But her, I think she lost her sister, her mother, and her uncle. mm-hmm. all from it. So there may be some genetic component.
Just some, yep, for some patients.
Going on for her. Well, what are the signs and symptoms?
Patients often will complain of weight loss, abdominal pain. Sometimes they turn yellow, which we call jaundice. But many times it's a difficult diagnosis to make. It can present as hard-to-control diabetes. There's often a prolonged workup while doctors are trying to figure this out because it's not a cancer we screen for.
So I wondered how it's diagnosed. Is it something to do with the blood or?
CAT scan, usually.
CAT scan, usually? Mm-hmm. And you, what then, see a tumor? Or?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Talking about pancreatic cancer today, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or maybe experiences to share. Either you have pancreatic cancer, have had it, or a loved one or friend, I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234. You can go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd love to hear from you. What's the prognosis for someone who is diagnosed with this type of cancer? Dr. Winslow, we'll turn to
sure.
you for that.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, the numbers are pretty discouraging to most patients. The overall survival rate of pancreas cancer is very low. It's probably on the order of only 5% of all comers. And most people, the majority of people, even probably as many as 70 or 80% of people have disease that has already spread outside of the pancreas at the time they're diagnosed. For the small fraction of people who it's localized and can have surgery, the survival rate is better, but it's still relatively short overall. And the 5-year survival rate of people who are operated on in general is around 20 to 25%.
Is there a particular type of person who is more likely to survive? I guess somebody where it's caught early. But
mm-hmm. It is stage dependent. So the earlier the stage, in general, people survive longer. But overall, in all stages, the cure rate or the long-term cancer-free survival rate is relatively low, even for early stage disease.
Yeah, even for early stage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm one of these positive guys who likes mm-hmm. to look on the good side of it. And mm-hmm. I look at somebody like Charlotte Ray, who's now 90 years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think she had surgery in 2010.
Yep.
And she's doing just fine.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, similar situation. Mm-hmm. She got caught very early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are certainly patients who have long-term survival and who have cure. But relatively speaking, we aim for life prolongation and improving quality of life and the time, and know that some people will get cures, but not most.
Let's turn to Jean in Appleton. Jean, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. So I flipped your show on, and I decided I had to call you to talk to you about some of the early warning signs of pancreatic cancer that doctors seem to miss. And I don't want to say I know more than you by any means, but we have so far lost my husband, my sister, 5 cousins, and a second cousin to pancreatic cancer. So I have done a whole lot of research on my own. I've done a 4-generation family history, and we can trace it all back to my grandmother. And there's symptoms that Mayo Clinic put out a brochure on this some years ago, and I found this, that doctors seem to ignore. And I've seen it now up close with both my husband and my sister. And one of them that's real obvious is family history. They don't look at family history, especially with diabetes. According to Mayo, if you're diagnosed with diabetes that seems to come on suddenly and you have little or no family history of diabetes, that you should bring it to your doctor's attention to ask for further screening for pancreatic cancer, because in that case, it could very well be a pancreatic lesion that's causing your glucose intolerance. Another thing, my husband had this for years, itchy skin, palms and the soles of his feet. And I guess that's a little-known side effect of jaundice that does that, only it was not enough jaundice that you could see it on him. And changes in taste. He suddenly lost the taste for coffee and beer, and he used to like both of them. And just the fact that you stop liking some of these things, there's a reason for that. It's not just that, you know, you've got refined taste now. You know, and then later, of course, you get into the unexplained weight loss. You know, he thought he was dieting and doing well for a change, and the lack of appetite. All these things were just too yeah. generic for the doctors to put two and two together. The diabetes that came on when he was 55, just out of the blue.
Yep.
My sister at 65 suddenly had glucose intolerance, and she died at 65 of pancreatic cancer.
Well, I thank you so much for calling. And Dr. LeConte, do you want to comment first?
Yeah, Jean's exactly right. Rapid onset, hard to control diabetes. As a primary care doctor, that would be an indication to do a CAT scan looking for pancreas cancer. So her point is totally valid.
So, and a CAT scan, and those the symptoms that she described, are those?
The itching of the skin we generally associate with jaundice, so not years of itching, but a pretty abrupt onset of itching, and then usually yellowing of the eyes, that kind of thing. Taste changes, for sure, you can see with pancreas tumors.
Yeah. So those are certainly what she's talking about today.
Yep.
Is
particularly the unexplained weight loss. Not all tumors in the pancreas will block the bile duct and cause the jaundice. Those are the easier ones. But the ones on the left side of the pancreas often are just what she talked about, low appetite, change in taste, and weight loss.
Well, Jean, I'm sorry for your losses, certainly. And I thank you so much for calling with that information. I really appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Thank you. I want to give Erlene and Kenosha a chance. Erlene, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, I'm celebrating my 22nd year following surgery for pancreatic cancer.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
It is. It's what I know. Truly, I know. Spiritually, it was nothing more than a blessing. I went to Dr. Mario Guerrero here with intense pain for 12 hours, exactly where you expect it to be, upper abdominally. I then was sent by Mario Guerrero into Milwaukee to Frayard. Dr. Stuart Wilson took over completely. And I went into surgery knowing all the facts. I was ready to leave. I was prepared to pass on. But on the way out of surgery, he pushed my gurney himself, saying there's been a miracle. He knew he had got it. Well, of course, my eating habits are a little different than most people, but that's easy to live with. The operative word being live.
Yeah.
I'm grateful.
Yeah. Well, now there's a good story.
Yeah, that's right.
I love that story, and it's a perfect timing for it, Erlene. Thank you so much, and congratulations. And I'm so glad that you've beaten that disease. Talking today about pancreatic cancer with our two guests, Dr. Emily Winslow and Dr. Noel LeConte. They'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. Talking about pancreatic cancer today, I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. With me today, Dr. Emily Winslow, surgeon at UW Health, specializing in diseases in the liver, bile duct, and pancreas, and Dr. Noel LeConte, who is a medical oncologist at the UW Carbone Cancer Center. It's so great to have them with us today to talk about it, this disease. You may have some questions about pancreatic cancer. I hope you'll join our conversation. Maybe you've got an experience to share. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And speaking of Facebook, Marcus posted on Facebook. He asked, what is acute pancreatitis? He has a friend diagnosed with it. The ER doctor told his friend if he didn't stop drinking alcohol, he would die soon. Is that something I can... Well, go ahead and talk, Dr.
Sure.
Winslow.
Yeah, acute pancreatitis is an inflammation of the pancreas, not a cancer of the pancreas. But it can... People who have recurrent episodes of pancreatitis do increase their risk for pancreas cancer. So, and in terms of what the ER doctor said, I think that's often the case. People who are drinking enough to cause severe inflammation of their pancreas can cause other problems as well with their liver. So,
lots of callers online here, but what's the research that's going on right now in this area, Dr. LeConte?
Yeah, I think the important point here for pancreas cancer is that it's not an unsolvable problem. But we need a lot more funding to figure it out. We get about 2% of the National Cancer Institute's funding, even though it's a relatively lethal cancer, meaning most people diagnosed die from it.
Yeah.
Funding-wise, we're about where breast cancer was in the 1950s. You know, there's just a lot of questions that Dr. Winslow and I have that haven't been answered by trials, like when do we use radiation? Should we do chemo before or after or both with surgery? You know, who is an ideal surgical candidate? What's the right initial chemo regimen? So no shortage of questions, but we need money. You know, clinical trials especially are quite expensive.
So what kinds of trials are going on right now?
So there's a lot of trials looking at different chemotherapy drugs, different ways to use chemotherapy. Pancreas cancer, unlike pretty much every other cancer that we treat, doesn't have a targeted agent, doesn't respond generally to immunotherapy. It's really all about as much chemotherapy as we can get into these patients, and the more drugs we put in, the harder it is for them to tolerate.
Yeah.
Traditional old school, what we call cytotoxic chemo, has been the best one, the ones that just target fast-growing cells, whether that's in the pancreas or in the lining of your gut, and that's why they all get those side effects. We're also doing trials looking at radiation, when should that be used, sequencing of our treatments for patients who have a tumor that maybe is a little bit, looks like it's resectable, maybe not totally. Trials are done across the nation. We have certain studies that are just done at our center, regional studies, so a lot of different
people,
ways to do it.
Where do people contribute to this? Are there organizations, or what organizations, if somebody wanted to contribute?
Yeah, well, we have a homegrown one here at UW, which is the Pancreas Cancer Task Force, fundraising specifically for UW investigators. More broadly, PanCAN is a wonderful organization that does national work, advocacy, and research around pancreas cancer. And then there's other, Lustgarten Foundation comes to mind, the Pancreas Cancer Foundation, that would be similar places people could donate.
Well, we have, as I said, many callers online. Let's go to Mark in Lake Geneva next. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to get you, hopefully, to touch on the recent work done by Jack Andreka on a cheap test for early detection.
Yeah. My understanding of Jack's test, so this is that high school kid who won an award for finding this pretty novel and inexpensive potential way to screen for pancreas cancer.
Yeah.
It's in preclinical testing at this point, so we're trying to get it adequately prepared so that we can then bring it into humans, and then it would go to market. So we're talking about many years probably before it comes to patients.
Mm.
Okay.
But, all right, thanks a lot for calling. Maureen in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I just have a question. I have a family member in his early 60s, has been very tired for a number of months. Doctors have ruled out heart problems, done a bone marrow test, which was negative, slightly enlarged spleen, but also done ultrasounds for and ruled out any liver problems. Might there be anything related to pancreas that wouldn't typically have been looked at and that we should ask a physician?
Yeah, I think it's always difficult to prove something's not the pancreas. So symptoms, general symptoms like fatigue, could certainly be due to a pancreas problem or many other problems. I think the only way they could definitely rule out a pancreas cancer or a pancreas problem is to do an image that sees the pancreas well and an ultrasound doesn't. It can see part of the pancreas, but usually not most. So it's usually a CAT scan or an MRI would be the best test to actually rule out a pancreas problem. So obviously, like any problem, the best thing to do would be to bring up your concerns or the patient's concerns directly with the physician and help them, have them explain the testing that's been done and what else might be able to be done.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks, Maureen, for calling. Brenda in Oconomowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Brenda.
Yes, hello. I just pulled off the road here. It's a very opportune time for this. My father, they found a mass. Sonogram showed a mass, so he's going in for the MRI. He has many of the symptoms that have been talked about. Adult onset diabetes, the itching that she was talking about. He's not eating some foods. There's a lot of symptoms going on. So as a person who's maybe going to be navigating this process, what recommendations do the doctors have for someone who could be just all of a sudden, I think we might be facing this as of Monday?
Oh, Dr. Winslow, could you comment?
Sure. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that your family's going through this. It's a really difficult time when there's still some uncertainty as to what the diagnosis is and the stage of the disease. But the most important thing, I think, is to get thorough testing to both identify the problem and then to determine the extent of the disease. at the same time treating the symptoms. So they're kind of two things that should be done at the same time, both helping him feel better if possible from pain or nausea or symptoms like that, and also figuring out what to do. If it is a pancreas cancer, we would encourage what we call multidisciplinary evaluation, meaning evaluation by a group of doctors who take care of pancreas cancer together, both medical oncology, radiation oncology, and a surgeon who does pancreas cancer as an important part of their practice to get an expert opinion.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Cheryl in Oshkosh, your turn next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I have a question. My father died of pancreatic cancer many years back. He was in his mid-70s, and he was a drinker throughout his whole life and smoked. And also, several years after he passed away, his sister died of pancreatic cancer, and she never drank or smoked at all. I'm just wondering if there's something my siblings and I need to be concerned about, or if there's some types of screenings or anything that would possibly
be helpful.
Detect a genetic component or something.
Sure.
So a couple thoughts there, Cheryl. So just with your parent having had pancreas cancer, you're at about twice the risk of the average person. That in and of itself may be enough for your primary care doctor to justify some x-rays, depending on if you're having symptoms yourself. There are some families that we consider high risk, and we have them see the genetic counselor and the gastroenterologist. There's not one clear way to screen for pancreas cancer, so sometimes we use endoscopic ultrasound, sometimes it's MRI, sometimes it's CAT scan, but the first step is to meet with that team. Johns Hopkins has really pioneered this work. And then there are certain populations, particularly Ashkenazi Jewish people, where given that history, if you have Ashkenazi Jewish heritage, it would really make sense to meet with a genetic counselor specifically to look for this BRCA2 gene.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Paul in Sturgeon Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just had a comment. I had a parent who suddenly became ill Super Bowl weekend, and within 4 weeks she was dead, and it was cancer. The oncologist never made a diagnosis, and we went down the road of, you know, radiation and all this other stuff. And I came to find out later, after doing a little research, that this is actually kind of not a systemic problem, but it is a problem in the oncology world of not having frank conversations with family members when there's a terminal illness. And the fact that we had to find out from the nurse and not the doctor was, to me, it was both disrespectful and unprofessional.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get any... Dr. Winslow, comment?
Yeah. Paul, I would say, first of all, that I'm sorry to hear that. I think it's really true that overall in medical training, we have not done a great job informing people how to give bad news. And actually, the University of Wisconsin group is, I think, trying to pilot ways to teach people how to do that better. And I think that sometimes is part of what plays into it, is everybody is a little... You know, it's difficult for both the physician and the family, but I think the physicians really need to be able to do that better and to do it in a timely fashion. And so I really appreciate your comment and take it to heart.
Yeah.
I would also chime in here to say there's some guidelines that just came out that recommend early palliative care consultation, which are people who specialize in what we call advanced care planning, meaning knowing what your diagnosis is, your prognosis, controlling symptoms, getting them involved from the initial visit with pancreas cancer patients. And I think that's an excellent step in the right direction, because even if the oncologist is unable or unwilling to have that conversation, I can guarantee you that palliative care will deliver that news.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's talk about it. Thank you again for calling, Paul. It's an important thing to bring up. What about the family and friends, and what role, positive role, helpful role can family and friends play?
Well, we wouldn't be where we are today in pancreas cancer without family and friends, because this is a cancer that until recently had almost no survivors. Every inch of progress we've made has been made by family and friends, because the way we fund cancer research right now, we fund it by who has the most advocates or who has the loudest advocates. It's a big burden, I think, to put on people who are grieving and have lost a loved one to then ask them to fundraise for that particular thing that took their loved one. Other than doing advocacy work, you know, there's really simple things like making meals. If you're loved one has these taste changes, you know, trying different things for them, running errands. I mean, patients on these treatments get really, really fatigued, and they need help. They need help.
I think the other thing is just being another set of ears for them at appointments, because there's a lot of information often given to people in a pretty short period of time, and overwhelming. So I think it's very important for us at visits to have the patient have a family and friends there with them, either taking notes or asking questions or being their advocate. And I think that that's a really important function for patients.
Yeah, I've had the experience of sitting in on about 4 hour session with a friend, and there's a lot of information that person took notes, and I was glad to see that, because there's just so much that you kind of have to remember,
right?
Because there's a lot that goes into your care and what you do with yourself. Bud in East Lansing, Michigan, up next. Bud, thank you for calling.
Hi there. This is a great program. I hope there's a way of getting like a YouTube, but to get it out there so that other people who miss your today's show can call in. It's very informative. I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 6 months ago, and I'm in a clinical study working to evaluate Vilalbrev. Two questions to your doctors. Are there any new drugs that have come on the market for cancer, pancreatic cancer patients in the last year or two? And what are your recommendations on diet to assist folks who are battling the disease?
So there was a new clinical trial released in June advancing the chemotherapy we give after surgery. So a new regimen there that improves survival and cure rates. As far as new drugs for stage 4 disease, we haven't had one of those for about 2 years. There was a second-line drug called MM398 that was approved. I want to say, Bob, thank you so much for participating in a clinical trial. That is how we advance the science against this cancer, and that's an incredibly important thing, and it's a lot to ask of patients, so I'm really delighted that you did that. As far as diet, I generally recommend if people have nausea from chemo, they focus on ginger snaps, ginger tea. Ginseng can be helpful for fatigue related to chemotherapy. The taste changes, if people have metallic tastes, we recommend they not use metal utensils, that they use plastic. That can help. But then pretty much everything else is okay. We have most of our patients meet with dietitians to figure out the right thing to eat. A lot of patients struggle with their weight, so we're focusing more on calories and intake than any absolute food that is okay or not okay.
Yeah, interesting. Bob, thank you, and good luck to you. Thank you so much. Al in Lodi, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hello. I'm one of Emily Winslow's patients. And she performed a successful surgery on me back in June, around the 21st, I believe it was. And I'm one of the very, very, very lucky ones, and I can't thank her enough. But what I wanted to contribute was something that I hadn't even mentioned to her, but now it makes total sense once I was diagnosed. For about a year or two before the surgery, I didn't know what was going on. I had severe abdominal pain, and it was misdiagnosed as GERD and all this. But I noticed I live out in the country, and it's like a jungle out here. And I know it sounds kind of far out there, but it was true, that I'm susceptible to mosquito bites and horn flies and hornets, whatever you have. But for those 2 years, they wouldn't even land.
Oh.
They totally stayed away from me. I hadn't had a bug bite in 2 years. But then when I was diagnosed, it all made sense. Yeah. And now that I've had the surgery, they're back.
Oh.
I'm sorry about that.
I know it sounds kind of out there, but it's true. I never mentioned that because I kind of brushed it off. But then when I heard the diagnosis, it all made sense.
Oh. You bring up an important point that often patients notice things that physicians don't know much about yet. So I think recognizing your own body and your symptoms is really important.
Al, thank you so much. And another
it's good to hear from you.
another positive result here. We Nick from New Berlin emailed to ask if there's a transplant for the pancreas.
The answer to that is yes, there is pancreas transplant, but in general, it's not utilized for pancreas cancer for a lot of reasons. So it's used mainly for a form of diabetes or autoimmune pancreatitis or other forms of pancreatitis that are bad. So with pancreas cancer in general, transplant is not not one of the options for treatment.
Mm. Marilyn from Milwaukee emailed to say she has one brother-in-law who just died of pancreatic cancer and two in hospice. Presently, she has many small cysts in her pancreas and two larger ones in the head. Her Frater doctor is having her go for MRIs annually now for 2 years, and things are the same. She still has pancreatitis sporadically. Her neuropath has suggested using SpecChoy? Or SpeciChoy? I'm not sure how that goes. Any suggestions on that?
So I think that the cystic disease of the pancreas is a really difficult and hard topic. And in general, it's a pretty different thing than pancreas cancer. But pancreas cysts can become malignant with time or turn into cancer. And so I think the follow-up that you're having is the right thing to do. When you have pancreatitis and pancreas cyst, it can be difficult. And I think the doctors at Frater are really experienced in this area and are probably making the recommendations to you.
Yeah, she's a non-smoker or drinker, regularly exercises, has a great diet, but she does itch a lot.
Itching is difficult because even though we said it can be caused by pancreas cancer, it can be caused by many other things. So I think the important thing is to have blood testing for those enzymes that can be elevated by pancreas cancer.
And Ted and Toma, your turn. Hi, Ted.
Hi, I had a colon restructure surgery like 5 years ago due to diverticulitis. 18 inches came out, the whole deal, and then I ended up with a ulcers of colitis. So I was put on, I'm on medication. Actually, I'm doing fine. But one of the medications they were giving me, the doctor said, this is a really good one, but if you have a risk of pancreatic cancer. I went, well, I guess I don't know what the choices were. I mean, that either.
Yeah. All right.
I'll take the medication, and I'm wondering, and I'm listening to some of the symptoms here, and I don't know if I really have anything. I mean, I seem to do fine. I have no digestive issues whatsoever. The only complaint I have is when I get thirsty sometimes, because I'm not drinking enough water or something. Then I can't drink anything. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to.
I'm going to break in there because. We need a response. Dr. Locati, you?
Yeah. So I'm not aware of a specific ulcerative colitis drug that's been associated with pancreas cancer, but there are drugs we use to suppress the immune system to calm down ulcerative colitis that are associated with some cancers, lymphomas being the most common. You know, as an oncologist, we would like him to have the lowest possible dose, and if it's feasible for him not to be on an immune suppressive, that's always better.
Okay.
But if that's what he needs to control his ulcerative colitis, you know, better to treat the condition he has than worry about a future risk.
Okay, there we go. Thank you so much, Ted, for calling. I want to, we've got a minute or two left to go here. Helpful organizations. Are there organizations out there that are helpful to people in this situation?
PanCAN. PanCAN is simply incredible. PanCAN.org. They do legislative call-ins. They do information for patients and families. They have a survivor program where they will pair up a patient with somebody of similar stage, gender, and age, and somebody who's already been through the treatment that's been proposed. That would be a great place to start.
And then local support groups. Certainly cancer support groups, even if they're not pancreas cancer specific, are helpful to many, but not all patients. So
yeah, Gilda's Club.
Gilda's Club. And the options, you know, I think you were talking earlier about exploring all of the options, and there are, be sure to ask a lot of questions, I think.
I think you have to be your own advocate or have your friends and family be your advocate and help explore all the options and seek a second opinion. That's always, we always encourage that.
Yeah. And ask about trials.
And ask about trials. Yeah, mm-hmm. the caller earlier mentioned a trial, and I wondered if you knew that drug that he was.
I do. Yep. Yeah. And, yep. It's a PARP inhibitor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's you know,
it's an investigation. Yep, it's a good study.
Can't talk about it. I mean, you really, there's no results yet
because it's
a study. Okay. So, well, let's hope there are many more studies and many more dollars coming in to you guys. And again, your organization is,
it's called the Pancreas Cancer Research Foundation. If you go, we call it the Task Force. If you go to the Carbone website, you can find us from there. Or people can just email me, too.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you both. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope we have a chance to do this again.
Thanks again.
Appreciate it very much. Emily Winslow, Dr. Emily Winslow, surgeon at UW Health, and Dr. Noel Locante, a medical oncologist at the Carbone Cancer Center. Great to have them with us, and I really appreciated the information they were able to provide for us today. Well, we have gosh, it's already Thursday, which means tomorrow is Friday. And we, you know what we always do on Friday? We do a gardening show. And we'll be doing it again tomorrow. The Vicars of Vegetables join us. Stay with us.